Welcome back to the Now Age podcast with me, Ruby Warrington. So I just listened back to this week's episode, and I am so happy to be sharing this conversation with you. My guest is a woman named Gail Larson. She's a world-renowned public speaking coach who's worked with many names you will be familiar with, people like Gabby Bernstein, Sophia Amoruso, and Danielle Laporte, to name a few. Listening to it again now was very timely for me. I'm currently, as you will know, in full-on book promo mode for my new book, Sober Curious, which means I'm averaging about 2 speaking gigs a week right now. Anybody who's read my first book, Material Girl, Mystical World, will know that this used to be my idea of hell. Being a true introvert, according to my INFJ, Myers-Briggs personality type, I still find it very taxing emotionally and energetically to be out there and on stage and presenting. And I also know I'm not alone in this. Public speaking, I just Googled it, is the thing that people are most afraid of, which is equal parts crazy when you consider how many things there are to be afraid of in the world, and also very, very telling about what we fear might happen to us if we speak up or say the wrong thing. And it was Gail who helped me get past these fears and to actually find a degree of comfort with public speaking. Working with her also reminded me what a privilege it is to be given a space to share what I have to say and to really step up to that and embrace that with everything that I've got. Gail's been doing this work for 40 years and is a true, what I would call, a wisdom keeper. Every sentence, and you'll hear it, is just packed with teachings. And naturally, she has a way of delivering them in a way that just feels super nurturing and helpful. On a much deeper level, which is another reason I invited Gail onto the podcast, her work is about the importance of each of us finding our own voices, of us mustering the confidence to actually speak up, and of finding a speaking style that allows us to be ourselves. All this so that ultimately we realize how impactful our stories are and how it is truly a loss when they are not shared. For somebody who's also been known to declare myself uncoachable, being a true Aries, I tend to think that I know what's best for me, which is definitely not always the case. Gail is also one of the few people whose teachings I have just soaked up like a sponge. In this episode, we discuss how to turn anxiety about speaking into excitement, the stories that we have lived as a clue to our life purpose, speaking from what Gail calls your home zone versus staying in your comfort zone, why being present and being real is what makes a really great speaker, the power of storytelling and compassionate listening as tools for healing, how past and even past life traumas speak to us through our bodies, and truth-telling as a practice for self-actualization. I know you're going to love listening to Gail as much as I love speaking to her and learning from her, and I hope you get tons out of this episode. So Gail Larson, thank you so much for joining me today for this conversation. I am just thrilled and excited to introduce you and the wisdom that you keep to my listeners at the Numinous. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. It's a delight, Ruby.
It's been a while since we were in each other's company. I came and attended your weekend-long intensive transformational speaking course in April. And I do not say this lightly. It was definitely and has been one of the most transformational experiences of my life, let alone my kind of healing journey, and really came at exactly the right time for me. So thank you for doing the work that you do as well.
Well, thank you for showing up for it. You know, it's definitely a co-creation to have a breakthrough. And your commitment to the work, to really move into your fullness as a speaker and to take this new book forward, was just a delight to witness.
Thank you for that vote of confidence. I'm feeling it, and I really am feeling it. And I say this because I'm gonna talk a little bit about how I found you. But at the beginning of the weekend, you asked each of the participants, what would you like to get out of this weekend? What would you like to get out of this experience? And we each had something different. that we wanted. It was almost like kind of, you know, writing our little wish list to the universe / you. And mine was, I want to feel as excited and buzzed before a speaking gig as I always do afterwards. Because I always, you know, I always come out of a speaking situation feeling fantastic. And I always used to go into a speaking situation feeling the exact opposite, just racked with anxiety about how it was going to go. And Gail, that happens now. So how did you do that? How did you facilitate that for me? You took exactly what I wanted, and that's exactly what has been happening since. How do you do that?
You know, that's a pretty standard request, Ruby, but I think it's the building blocks that help you to stand firmly in your power and trust yourself. You know, if I just said to you, let's give a talk and we'll teach you how to breathe and stand, and it's so much more than that. It's like that deep, abiding trust in what you bring to the world that if you don't express, will never be heard. And we do that, as you know, our first step was really spending an afternoon in that deep dive into who you are and what you bring and what you care about, and naming your original medicine, that indigenous belief that we do have a gift that's original to us, and that if we don't express it, it's lost to the world. And to start claiming that and really standing in the power of it, I think is the first step of truly understanding that if we don't speak what we are here to say and find our way to do it, that there's a healing for the world that will never happen. We're each a strand in this web of life, and we need to do our part and hold that with intention. The other piece, I think, is getting so solidly clear about your message. If you know your medicine, you know your message, and you have whatever practice helps you be in your power when you stand to speak, it's an entirely different experience than hoping for the best.
It is, and an entirely different experience than making sure you have all of your ducks in the row and all of your speaking points kind of carefully mapped out. In fact, it's almost the opposite of that, I would say. And I think exactly what you helped tap me into was a sense of excitement about sharing my gifts, a sense of excitement, an innate excitement that's always been there about sharing what it is I have to share, and that excitement overriding any fear I may have around not saying the right thing or not saying something that's going to make everybody happy. I really think that that was kind of at the essence of it, actually. And I love the fact you already spoke on this idea of us having an original medicine. And this taps back into what I was going to talk about in terms of how I came to your work and why it felt so aligned. Anybody who's read my first book, Material Girl, Mystical World, will know that I open up the chapter where I talk about Dharma, which is the idea of us having an individual life purpose that is a vital building block or piece of our human kind of puzzle board, I suppose. And I open that chapter talking about my fear of public speaking, how every time I was called to speak in front of a group, I would well up and be overcome with tears often when speaking about things that were very important or very meaningful to me. And that this knowing that I was going to cry and break down and be this vulnerable in front of a group created huge amounts of fear for me around speaking. However, I opened the chapter on Dharma mentioning this because I really had begun to realize that the fact I was so afraid and the fact that I had such an intense emotional reaction when speaking on issues that were important to me showed me actually that it was something I am here to do, that it carried an incredibly deep charge for me. And it was around that time, of course, that the first book came out, and I discovered as well that being a writer means being a speaker. This was not an equation I had worked out for myself until it happened, unfortunately. It was around that time that your name, Gail, kept coming up, whether it was somebody recommending your book to me, whether it was somebody else I admired who I realized had been on one of your intensive trainings. And it became very clear that I had to move heaven and earth to work with you and study with you. And I wonder if you could speak a little bit on that idea of our original medicine, as you describe it, our unique and personal message being something that can help us align with our soul purpose, with our dharma, and how our stories, the stories that we are here to tell, are deeply connected to that also, or are a way into us discovering that for ourselves and also delivering that original medicine to the world.
So I would distinguish again between those, in that the original medicine is not what we do or our purpose, other than, you know, I think in a broader sense, our purpose is to express that medicine because it's the true essence of who we are. It's the gift we bring when we're not struggling, when we're in ease, when we're showing up at our best. So it's not a stretch. It's not something outside ourselves. It's something within ourselves that often gets buried in our desire to be accepted, to be liked, to play the game, to show up the way people want us. And in that journey, we can lose track and lose touch with that which is so essential to who we are that it's often more memorable than our actual given name. And we have to find it and express it. So we apply that medicine to our purpose. And I believe our purpose reveals itself over time through the stories we live. I think we're just lined up to have the life experience we have, so that we're very clear about our message, because the only message that's believable comes from our own story. So medicine is separate from purpose, and I think then the purpose helps us define the message.
I love that. And I'm remembering only now while we're speaking that I named my original medicine Seer of Mystic Realities, which I absolutely just love. And it seems to encapsulate so much this idea of the material girl, mystical world.
It was who you were long before you chose to write that book.
Yes.
I think the way we tap into the truth of it is to say, oh, this has always been with me. Or life orchestrated its design so that I would begin to express this medicine that I might not have been aware of otherwise. So that medicine is the foundation, and it's not something we need to go around repeating to ourselves continuously, but at a time when we're likely to be nervous, like getting up in front of a big crowd, it's almost a mantra to remind us of the truth of who we are so we can radiate that. And you talked earlier about excitement and fear. Fritz Perls said, fear is excitement without the breath. So I honestly believe that speaking, when our bodies start doing what they do, it's a way of saying, get bigger. You're talking to more people. You need this energy right now. And when we can reframe it that way, it totally transforms our experience.
And the experience of those who are hearing us as well.
Because, you know, someone in my immersion last weekend got a message before she did her final talk, and she said, I just heard. Remember, this is not about you. And we do all this work in our speaking to learn who we are, what we can do that brings value, how to express it in a way that's aligned with our truth. And then we just have to get out of the way, because we work, as you know, from what I call the home zone, not the comfort zone. And the home zone is when there's that flow of spirit through us and we trust it in the moment that allows us to be spontaneous within whatever structure we may have imagined.
Could you talk a little bit more about the home zone? It's a cornerstone of your work. And we did some live coaching in the session where I was finding it really difficult to get into my home zone. And you were coaching me to really almost relive the stories that I was telling, relive the experiences that I was sharing on an emotional level to get me into that home zone. Can right. you talk a little more about how we can get into the home zone, and maybe what are some of the, because I think, I mean, beyond speaking, like living from the home zone seems to me like a very exciting prospect, you know? What are some of the ways we can get there, and what are some of the biggest blocks that you think people have to living and speaking from their home zone?
Well, first of all, it might be an unusual concept because most people in speaking want a comfort zone. And it doesn't mean that you don't have a comfort zone. It's actually part of your foundation, because the comfort zone is what gets you invited to speak. People know that you have good information, that you're credible, that you'll honor that agreement, that you are professional. But most speaking stops there. So the home zone is when we bring that speaking alive and are emotionally connected to ourselves and then the audience, so that what we're saying is memorable. There's some Native American wisdom that says, tell me a fact and I'll listen. Tell me a truth and I'll hear. But tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever. The story is what we remember. So we can also tell a story from the comfort zone, as that's what we were working on. How do you move it to the home zone? And it is about feeling it fully, reliving it, as we said, when you're actually telling it. So it's not scripting some story that now I'm going to use this. It's allowing that story to flow as we tell it. So it's not only for the audience, it's allowing us in the moment to have the discovery of how that is informing our life right now, why that story is important. And maybe the block is that it's easier sometimes to know what we're going to say and just deliver it and have it all planned. But the mystery can't get into that quite so well. And there's always something in the actual energy of a specific moment where if we can open and be in the flow of the home zone, something new will come in that will surprise us as well as the listeners.
I guess, yeah, it's about being present with our current experience and how where we're at right now might be meaning we're interpreting the story that we're going to tell in a slightly different way, and that presence will actually make it more real, more current, have more currency literally in the moment and more charge in the moment. And I think what you're describing, yeah, is that when you gave us the sort of proverb just there, the Native American proverb, it's like what makes people really kind of come alive, what makes people really connect to your story is the aliveness of the story, the currency of the story.
Because when we look at what makes a wonderful speaker, we're not saying, oh, they had great content. They're usually saying she was alive, she was human, she was vulnerable, she was authentic, she was open, she was fun. Because that's what people find relatable. Relating to more information that we can get online is just not that exciting.
Right. There's so much information online. The last thing we actually really need is more information. What we need and what people are craving is more humanness. And human means sometimes making mistakes or saying something coming out the wrong way, I guess, as well.
Well, I was telling a story in class this weekend of an experience I had in the spring that had been very painful and difficult. And I had actually said earlier in the class, I had quoted Martin Shaw, who is a mythologist and ecologist who teaches in the UK. And Martin had said at a workshop, you don't trap a story, you track a story. So trapping it would be scripting it. I know what this means. Tracking it allows it to inform and teach us as we tell it. So I'm in the middle of telling this painful story right before I was talking about the energetics of change. And right in the middle of it, it was like, I finally get what that was about. I get it. And the class was so excited to see in action the huge aha that can come from being with the story rather than thinking we already understand it.
Mm. Again, with being in that place of presence, like with yourself and with your story, and just being in the moment with it.
Yeah, and to trust it's going to be teaching you as you tell it. Mm. So it's a very exciting moment to really see how our stories as we sort through, especially the things that have been difficult, can bring new levels of understanding that really are very healing.
Mm. Well, this segues really nicely into speaking about the power of storytelling for healing. I think I told you during our weekend that with our Moon Club group, we have all of our Moon Club ambassadors around the world host what we call story medicine circles, which are literally just spaces for people to come together and share their stories in a completely non-judgmental and very kind of loving and supportive forum, to share their stories in their wholeness without people feeling like they have to comment or they have to help or they have to fix, just to allow the stories to be told. And I wonder if you could speak a little more about what you perceive as the power of storytelling for healing ourselves.
I think we need to be fully heard, Ruby. Mm. We sort of, you know, our stories leak out little by little. And I think the witnessing of a story in its entirety without interruption is such a healing balm for to be heard. Mm. Indigenous wisdom would say, you can come to my door three times with your story, and after that I will turn you away. Because you don't want a difficult story to create neural pathways that we start thinking it's who we are. Mm. And if we can't tell it in its entirety, we just never feel heard. Mm. And I've seen this a few times. I had a story about a relationship that ended, and I had a girlfriend who knew pieces of it. And one time we were driving from Denver to Aspen, and she said, I want to hear the whole story, start to finish. I'd never had that before. And the cleansing, I mean, the tears, the cleansing was overwhelming. And it allowed it to be witnessed so I could move on. I was teaching a class in Vancouver with two friends who came together. It was a two-day intro class. And they were doing the work. And the next morning they came back. And when we checked in with each other, one of them said, I told my story from start to finish last night, and I feel healed. So I think what we try to do, I think it's not about a conversation. It's about really taking the time with someone we care about or in the circles that you're describing for a story to be truly heard so it can be released, and it can also give us the insight that we might have from the distance of a bit of time as to what that was about in our life. It doesn't take the pain away, but I think time does that. But I don't think until we find a way to hold, especially a traumatic story, that we can make sense of it in our being, that it's ever healed. And so in the telling of it and the respectful witnessing and acceptance, something can shift.
It's like there is an opportunity to have perspective and to really see all the pieces and see the teachings of that story or that experience once it's actually fully outside of you. And it can only get fully outside of you once it's been told in its wholeness. I definitely experienced that in a way with the writing of my book. But it's still, writing has always been an amazing tool for me for that kind of catharsis, and particularly in the writing of my first book, which was a very personal piece in the end. But I still feel that the actual speaking of the story carries an additional resonance when it comes to actually healing it above and beyond a written piece.
I think so, because a written piece, people might witness in a different way and you might not be there.
Mm. And this is actually reminding me of something that came up on a panel discussion I hosted recently, where we were speaking about this idea of catharsis. And we had a psychiatrist speaking, and he was saying three things need to happen for emotional catharsis. There needs to be a sharing of the experience. You need to be able to feel the emotions of that experience again. And third, and perhaps most importantly, it needs to be in an empathetic setting where you have the sensation or the understanding that whoever you're telling the story to understands and feels what you have experienced also. And I wonder if you can speak more. We talk in our story medicine circles about the idea of deep listening. And I think you describe this as compassionate witnessing. But I wonder if you could share a little more about how to create those spaces, even if it's with a family member or with a friend, you know, when you have something that you feel needs to be shared, to ask for that compassionate witnessing or that deep listening.
I think people want to, if we tell something that is difficult or raw, there's a natural tendency of people we care about wanting to fix it. And maybe that's the first request. I really want to share something with you right now that I just need to express. Please just listen. And there's nothing to be fixed here. Your insight at another time might be helpful. But right now, I just want to be able to share my experience. Can you listen without asking questions, without trying to find a solution with me? Maybe that would be helpful later, but right now I just need to say it.
I think that's beautiful. And even you describing setting up a conversation that way, I'm getting a feeling of how just a kind of out breath, asking for the permission to just be and then creating that container.
I had a interaction with an old friend recently where I was visiting in their home. And it's been a year of a lot of loss and transition for me. And all he wanted to do was to tell me a book I should read about something about making friends with reality. I've been seeing a therapist who's also an astrologer, and she said, with your chart, that's the last advice you need.
You have a strong Neptune placement.
Well, I don't follow, but it's so much of my Capricorn practicality.
Right.
Yes, a lot of Neptune these days, and a lot of life asking for a bit of a different way of being and receiving. And it isn't about another book to read. It's about being heard. It's about being loved up. It's about that acceptance that we all crave. And when you talk about it in the context of story, Ruby, it's like being able to be witnessed in those transitions of our lives is the greatest gift we can give each other.
It is truly. And again, in that same panel, the psychiatrist was saying he believes we've created the need for mental health professionals because of the way that community and that family have been broken down in our modern society. We don't have those deep witnessing, intimate connections with people in our lives. And so we've created the need for mental health professionals to have those spaces, which actually we're able to create just by nature of us being human.
And by taking the time. And I think that's the challenge, that we move fast.
Yeah.
And we don't, for example, your circles, the deliberately making the space for the conversations we want to have to increase intimacy and depth and understanding in our lives usually comes in last. And then we, you know, and then we don't want to burden someone with it. So we do, and there's this, so much isolation, and therefore there is a need for professional support where it might have been held more solidly in community in the past.
I think, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I talk a lot about the difficulties of life in the quote unquote now age, as I call it, this idea of this society of kind of instant culture rather of instant gratification and instant access to anything creates a very sped up approach to these sorts of processes that we're describing, which is the opposite of what we need. I mentioned before we got on the call that I had a couple of quite mystical experiences happen during the weekend that I'd just love to describe to you and get a little of your insight on. The first was one morning, I came in to the session with a very stiff neck. I could barely move my neck left or right. And this is something that I had been experiencing a lot over the time since my book had come out, and I'd found myself in these sort of speaking scenarios. And there, lo and behold, it happened again during our weekend together. And I shared how a healer I had spoken to had asked me to speak to this part of myself that was experiencing physical pain whenever I found myself in a speaking situation. And almost immediately, the answer that I got when I asked this, my neck, why it was hurting this way, was because you're putting your neck on the line. And I had felt that perhaps this suggested some kind of a past life experience, maybe, of having been persecuted in a physical way for speaking my truth and for being seen and being heard. I wonder if you've experienced similar things to that in other groups or in throughout your history of doing this work, whether people had physical manifestations of perhaps past oppression when it came to sharing their voices.
I remember a class where this woman actually had a lot of confidence until she got to the thing she most needed to say, when we were really getting to her truth and what she wanted to communicate. And suddenly she would stop speaking. She would lose her voice totally. And I said to her, what's happening physically that's you're just stopping? And she said, it feels like a sword just went through my belly. And in that moment, I had this sense that it was some past life memory. And I said, do you think this is somewhere in your ancestry or a past life, persecution in this way? And she totally got it. And another woman jumped up and she said, oh my God, now I see why I feel like my throat is so constricted. And so I think even opening the possibility that that's what's here now, that it isn't our current experience, but it's something that's held in our cells that needs to be healed. Sometimes just the recognition of it can allow it to relax.
Well, I feel like that's certainly the case with me. I haven't had that neck pain since that weekend. That was the last time. And I feel like acknowledging that, almost even having that part of my story witnessed by the group there, was to help to move me past it, or help to somehow lay it to rest in a way. And the other thing that happened, and it was very spontaneous at the time, I vocally dedicated our last day, our last session, to my father. And I definitely have come to recognize on my own sort of healing path that a lot of my struggles, I suppose, are potentially things that I've kind of carried for him, you know, or a way of kind of working out pain for him. And I was just called out of the blue to dedicate this session to him. But again, I feel like actually vocalizing that in that moment was another real key piece to laying some kind of fear around speaking or fear around using my voice to rest. And I wondered if you could speak a little about acknowledging our ancestors and acknowledging mm-hmm. our lineage and what we may be carrying for them that can be a block to us kind of feeling confident about living in our home zone and really using our voice and claiming our power in the world.
I think that's beautiful, the acknowledgement to your father and realizing you're carrying it, because my understanding is that the ancestors do stand behind us and say, will this be the one? Hmm. Will this be the one who breaks the harmful family patterns for this generation and the generation to come? And when we tune into the fact that what we're carrying and what stands in our way is a pattern that has built over time, and we are the ones to break it, there's something so empowering about it. But I think, as you're saying, Ruby, first it's the understanding of, oh, I'm doing this because I'm carrying it until I release it, until I get conscious about it and work through it. So when we get that, I think there's a determination internally to, and we get what the pattern is, then there's this commitment to breaking it, being aware of it so that we can break it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just sort of honoring that it's there, acknowledging it and accepting it as well, you know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's not like we come here to waltz through it all. And we were talking in class this weekend about the insanity of thinking if somehow if we play our cards right, we won't have to deal with this kind of human stuff. And when we get over thinking we can escape the human condition, then we can start getting into, you know, looking at what it's asking of us at a given time so we can move toward our wholeness. And it isn't a healing just for ourselves. It's a healing for those who came before and that those who will be no longer be carrying it in future generations.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to just speak to you a little about this idea I mentioned before our call of radical truth-telling. And how, because I do truly believe that actually becoming me getting more comfortable with just speaking the truth in any and every situation is contributing on a big way to me feeling more comfortable about standing up in front of a lot of people and talking about what's going on. Truth-telling is, I don't know, it seems to me sometimes like it's the crux of my spiritual practice, actually. And I wonder what kind of insights you can share about the importance of truth-telling. Big truths, small truths, all the truths in between, and how we can embrace that in our lives.
Well, definitely as a speaker. And we talked about this too, that I think often, especially for women, to talk about truth-telling without talking about how difficult it can be to even know our truth at times is part of the journey. That we many times recognize that, whoa, something's off here. And the tendency is to not speak to that because we don't know yet that we're clear. And of course we want to be clear. So we let things slide and then they build and then it's more difficult the next time. So my sense of it is that the first piece of it is getting really clear about what our truth is. What is it that's going on? What is it I feel I need to say? And then setting a good space for doing that. I have found that it's really important when we're in that moment of discomfort to speak to that, even if we don't yet have the words for what's going on. Something as simple as, that's feeling kind of off and I can't yet put my finger on why. I'd like to get back to you about what, you know, when I'm more clear, because this is an important conversation. Or one way when we do need to enter that kind of courageous conversation, it's I'm disappointed in what happened and I'd like to find a creative solution. But in speaking, I was guided by a story that I heard from my teacher, Angelus Arion, about a native elder who went before Congress about a broken treaty. And I think the way he dealt with telling his truth to try to get to a good place in a negotiation is a beautiful, simple model, because we need simple models. We don't need complex scripts when we don't know what the other, especially when we don't know what the other person is going to say. Off script, there we go. So what he did was he said, you know, I'm really honored to appear before this august body. And I appreciate the chance to come and address you. And then he said what was working. He said, you know, we've had many treaties that have been to our mutual benefit. However, I'm here today about the one that isn't working. And then he did what was so glorious, and that would be an indigenous way, not necessarily our modern way. He'd say, and I regret to say that I have but four possible solutions. Because, you know, he might have had 10 on a good day. And so he gives his solutions, and then he says, and I'd like to know what you might add to that. So it's not about being in a fixed position when we're negotiating something. It's about opening a conversation where something can happen that we might not envision yet. And then our truth in the moment, I think, is another, you know, another layer of this, of, you know, really understanding what it is, finding the space that someone can listen. And actually, in an audience, Ruby, you know, you're the leader. We can't hedge waiting for permission. We've been asked to speak for a reason, and they want to hear our truth. Mm-hmm. So our willingness to speak clearly to what we know and see is part of our role as speakers. Someone was saying this week, we had a group that had all come, four of the six had come out of corporate, and they were talking about their fear of appearing woo-woo and blah, blah. And I said, come on. I said, we are the mainstream. If we would start speaking up the truth of what we know, there, we line up like a barcode with people who have a similar consciousness. But if as the speaker, we're afraid to show up fully, what are we suggesting?
Exactly. How can people, like you said, I love that, line up with our barcode if we're not fully expressing what's going on?
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's just something in our DNA as women of, let's see what they want, or let's wait till it's safe. And, you know, our job is to make it safe for others.
To give permission for other people to show up in the same fullness.
I love the Gertrude Stein quote about that. She said, beware the double ouch. The first ouch is when you try to be someone else so people will like you. And then the second ouch is when they find out the truth and reject you anyway.
Because
she says,
then
she says, go for the one ouch. It's much less painful.
The one ouch, like risking being yourself and people not liking you.
From the beginning.
From the beginning. And I think, and this gets into the last thing I want to speak to you about, which is really, really a very kind of juicy and important topic right now. It's this idea of how we can be our authentic selves in the era, the age of social media, where we're potentially speaking to and interacting with a lot of individuals who we don't have any connection to, who potentially even just see us as an avatar on which to project all of their own kind of like fears, judgments, etc., without really kind of like knowing who we are or hearing us fully, you know? And there's so much rhetoric around the idea of kind of like personal branding in terms of your social media presence around just be authentically you. The more you can be, the more people will resonate with you. And I think that can get quite confusing for people in a space where the interactions that we're having are very disconnected actually. And sort of fake in a way. And so I wonder if this is something that comes up in your groups or in your work, or if it's something that you've given much sort of thought to. Like, how can we carry this kind of authentic storytelling, this realness, as it were, into our social media presence also?
So are you looking at the short, quick statements and videos? The conversations feel very different. I had a conversation on Instagram last week with Danielle Laporte, and we were talking about what a tough year it had been, and the dark night of the soul, and the truth telling that comes when we're willing to just be with what is. But I agree with you. There's this. It's like trying to make ourselves look good consistently without being in the truth of the messiness of the human journey. I don't know quite what to say about it, except we need to balance it. Mm. If we as teachers, leaders, speakers are not willing to be with what's true, how can we ever ask for a world that isn't based on pretense and fear?
Yeah. And that includes being okay with not being everybody's cup of tea, not getting everything right all the time. I personally have really been trying to cultivate the idea of, yeah, my social media persona is almost an avatar that is me, Ruby, a reflection of me, Ruby, and what I believe to be true and what I know to be my truths, and also having a degree of kind of separation from that avatar, so that if there are people out there who don't like it and are going to tell me they don't like it in a very direct way, it's not immediately kind of like hitting me. I'm not having to absorb all of that immediately.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I honestly believe, Ruby, that we don't want to be all things to all people, because then we are editing and rehearsing to put forth a certain persona that isn't aligned with the truth of who we are. And if we were talking this weekend about the studies that say it takes 1 second to move into your fight or flight, if something with a negative evaluation, for example, and it takes 15 seconds to let in the good one. So we are in reaction to that one person who takes a pot shot at us, and it feels far more important than the 100 people who really found benefit from what we chose to do or what we said. And it's hard to take the hit, and I think it takes a lot of courage to be in the difficulty of it and continue to show up in your truth.
It does. It does. And cultivating that idea of a home zone space within to feel safe in, to feel safe expressing from, I think is actually a really integral piece of that whole equation, you know?
It is, because if what we're bringing forth in our social media, in our speaking, in our work in the world is not who we are when we're not being seen, there's a real problem there.
Yeah.
And usually people see right through it. So yes, it is cultivating that sense of inner alignment. So we trust that we will be attracting those with whom we can have the best relationships, where our work can have the most meaning. We are all at different stages of growth and soul level, and it's just not possible for someone to be loved by everyone. And yet there's still this part of us that wants to be and feels wounded when someone is not thoughtful in their feedback. But I do think, again, it's part of our job when we step forward to stand in our truth without apology. It doesn't mean we can't revise something later or apologize when something goes really wrong. And it's an inner journey to get to grounding and being okay with that. But gosh, it's to pretend that we can be paragons of perfection at every moment is just totally insane.
It's insane, unsustainable, and not the goal.
No. I had a client who has publishing companies and is an amazing writer. And she came to me a few months ago because she was scripting everything. And look how hard that is if you're speaking a lot. It's hard work. And so we worked on a new talk she was giving, and I was so excited for her because it was throwing away the script, being totally present with her story. And afterwards, she said people were lined up to talk to her. And she said, but the best news of all, it was not perfect, and I was fine with that. And I don't think we have anything to learn from someone who puts forth the perfect persona. It's like, that's them and this is me. And if we can share the trials and the joys, both of the journey, it's much more human, vulnerable, accessible, friendly. I think that's where we find our true tribe.
I think it is. And I think that's where we can truly help others. Like we touched on before, it's that permission giving, that permission slip for everyone just to breathe out and be in the moment and to be a human being and in all of the messiness and all of the perfection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Gail, thank you again so much for taking the time to come and share some of your wisdom today. Your work is just outstanding and such a gift. Has been such a gift to me personally and to all the people that interact with you. I'm going to share links in our show notes about how people can find you and look at the work that you do, the online courses that you do, as well as the in-person. So thank you again. And
thank you.
I'll speak to you soon.
I loved hearing what's emerging since we were together in April, Ruby. And I'm so proud of you with your new book and all that's happening. And what a gift you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Oof, that last piece of advice is so, so needed, right? The message from social media is basically that we have to be liked by as many people as possible, and that more people and more followers and more likes is what makes our story valid or important, when actually our story is never going to resonate with everybody. The important thing, and what I got from what Gail said, is that to be real and authentic means that the people who need our story, who need the medicine of our story, will be able to find us. So that's what to focus on. If you want a taste of Gail's work, so much of her wisdom is contained in her amazing book, Transformational Speaking. And you can also sign up for her online original medicine workshop at any time. I'll include the link in the show notes. Now, if you want to see me in action doing some of this speaking thing, be sure to be following at Ruby Warrington on Instagram, and make sure you're signed up for the Numinous newsletter, as those are the first places that I share about all of my upcoming events. That's all from me here this week. I'll see you next time. This podcast features original music and is edited by alloaudio.com, www.alloaudio.com.